You're listening to the Carol Cox Show on 1080 AM K108.
Day is ending, birds are wending back to the shelter of each little nest they love. Night shades falling, lovebirds calling. What makes the world go round? Nothing but love.
Yeah, she's going to be missed, man. That's Lena Horne in My Blue Heaven. Oh, man. Well, what a song. Hey, Carol, it's time for your show this morning, the Carol Cox Show on K108. It's a Sunday morning. Hi.
Hey, good morning. Thanks, Francis. And good morning to all of you out there. I wanted to just play a little Lena Horne to just say thank you and recognize her for all the good music she is.
Oh, Carol, before you start, one person I know who likes Lena Horne. You remember Fred Sanford, Sanford and Son?
Yeah.
Always mentions Lena Horne, Lena
always.
Horne's name. Yeah, in their episode.
Yeah, they did a lot of work together.
Red Fox and
Lena
Horne.
Did? Yeah.
All right.
You know, there was that time, and they there was some show I saw. They talked about partying together and what have
and
you.
I think she did appear on an episode of Sanford and Son, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah. So it was always nice to see her on TV whenever it was possible. What rare occasions, you know, in those times. But it was encouraging to see her and what she offered. And she will be missed. But we still have her music, so that's really good. Anyway, good morning again, and this is Carol. You can, if you'd like to, call in 524-1080, and you can go to the website at carol@carolcox.com. That's carolcox.com. If you'd like to email me while on air here, cc@carolcox.com, and I'll take your questions or comments on air. Anyway, looking at all of this activity going on, we're in the political season, and I thought, well, maybe, you know, the politicians are making promises, and they're telling us what the other guy didn't do, and I was just wondering, what are they really doing? I haven't really heard a solid statement on the environment, really haven't anything other than jousting on furloughs and what have you, so I thought I would just pick one subject which is dear to me, and that is the environment, and speak to the issue and the handling of the Hawaiian monk seal. And from that, I think a lot of you can learn a lot about the politics of this state and how it involves the federal government and the state government. And, you know, everyone is promising, that, and they tell you that, Colleen tells you that Ed isn't doing anything, and DeJue tells you he's going to do everything, and he understands, that's why he can do it all. And I was wondering, you know, just a little side note, Ed hadn't been around for the last 3-4 years, if I recall, but Hanabusa and DeJue has been around, and how did things go to hell in the handbasket so quick with them around? And now they're promising, and then I hear Ed say he's done a lot for the sanctuary, the monument, the Northwest Hawaiian Islands area, and I began to wonder, so, okay, we all, Linda Lingle claims that she had some hands in handling the monument and it coming to closure or coming to be. And a lot of them are claiming, but let's look below the surface. Once the fanfare is gone, what is really happening with the actual implementation or the policies? What are the policies? What are they doing behind the scenes now that they got their credits? And I looked, take Monk's Hill, the Hawaiian Monk's Hill. In May of 2005, the state of Hawaii had an application for an individual incidental take of, this would fall under the endangered species, for the Monk's Hill, the Hawaiian Monk's Hill. And you may not know this, but pretty much the Monk's Hill is one of the most endangered marine mammals in the United States. It's more of a primitive animal, connected to the primitive types of seals. And what happens is that their numbers are dwindling, and we don't really know what is happening, but you would be shocked at the amount of money that is thrown at them, and yet the numbers are declining. And so what they're now doing is, through the sanctuary and everything else, they're engaging. The state put in this application, and they basically were saying, well, you know, we are authorizing fishing with nets and hooks and the fishermen in the state waters. And in order to do that, if you authorize such a thing, then you need to address the Marine Mammal Protection Act, and you need to address the Endangered Species Act, and that's what this application would have done. So this speaks to the state. What is the state doing when they promise they're going to do all of these things? So Hanabusa hadn't said anything about monk seals or the environment, but we're going to lay this out. So they allow the fishermen, they allow the netters, and as you know now, we see monk seals are dying in the gill nets. Well, who authorizes the gill nets? Who authorizes the surround nets? Who authorizes the fishing? Fishermen are taking the responsibility, and they would love to participate in anything to minimize their impact. But they have to be told and have to be shown the proper way. And I have not spoken to a single fisherman that leaves home with the intent of causing problems to the monk seal. But what is happening now, they took the monk seal and they put the application in, but in the application they included the Hawaiian sea turtle, the hawksbill, and the green sea turtle, because we have a great number of green sea turtles. And they were concerned that they had to do this by law, which is the right thing to do, but somewhere along the way they withdrew the application. And this speaks to the management, where Linda Lingle says, oh, I've done so much for the environment and the sanctuary, the monument. In reality, the DLNR withdrew the application, which they are required to address under the Marine Mammal Act. They are required by law, if they are authorized. They would need an impact determination under the MMPA, the Marine Mammal Protection Act, before it could allow any fisheries to proceed. Then they would have to get a clearance under the Endangered Species Act, which would be a letter of authorization. And the secretary or his delegate or designee would be the one who authorizes that. the regional administration and the NOAA, or NIMS, would be able to issue a negligible impact determination. But the problem is, they pulled the application. Why did they pull it? Well, the Western Pacific Fisheries Council, who manages federal waters, advises NOAA and the National Marine Fisheries Service. They're only an advisory board. But somehow, Westpac was able to convince the DLNR to withdraw the application to address the monk seal issue and address any mitigating factors to minimize impact on the monk seal found in the waters of the state. And they withdrew that, and Westpac then engaged and still is currently actively involved in trying to delist the Hawaiian the sea turtle. Now, it sounds like scattergory here that I'm talking, but again, the application was submitted by the DLNR or DAR or Hawaiian Department of Conservation. They had the application. They were doing the right thing on the right course, because that is the right thing to do when you have endangered species, and especially a declining population. Well, the turtle is being threatened. It's a threatened species, but still afforded all the protection. So they put both in the same letter because they were trying to do the right thing. Somehow politics got involved, and Westpac, who has little or nothing to do with management of fisheries in state waters other than this interpretation that they have a right to look at the ecology. So they then, Westpac, asked the state to agree to withdraw the application and let them work on delisting the sea turtle, which means the monk seal now gets no attention. The monk seal does not get the proper review and the impacts on the monk seal, because somewhere down the line, someone played politics. Now, you know that on Western Pacific Fisheries Council, Laura Thielen sits on the Western Pacific Fisheries Council as chairman, and then you have Peter Young, who sits on the Western Pacific Fisheries Council. And how did they, knowing that by law they're obligated to address the MMPA and the impacts on the monk seal, and that's why they had this application, how did they allow it to be, or how are they allowing it to continue to be withdrawn and not addressed and not take, and while we have monk seals drowning in nets? So the really most difficult thing about this situation is that these people somehow lent themselves to a shenanigan or a practice that is just simply unethical. They are holding back because the Western Pacific Fisheries Council wants to, quote, and here's the sneaky part about this. They say to us that the reason they want to do this is because they want to grant and afford the native people the right to be able to take and consume the sea turtle. But the problem is, there's little or nothing to do with the native people having a right. What it has to do with, you see, if Kitty Simons is able to, through the efforts of the laziness of the DLNR, Chairperson Thielen and others, is able to get them to withdraw and just sit on their thumbs, she can then represent that she's doing this for the native people, and in turn delist the turtle, and so therefore no impacts in the future. Wouldn't have to have studies on the regarding fishing boats or longliners or purse seiners or anything, bottom fishermen. So a very sneaky way. Now, where is Senator Hanabusa at in this? Where is Charles DeJoux and his party on this? So I bring them in because they tell us what they're going to do and what the other fellow didn't do. But this is a sneaky practice that is occurring right under their noses. And I will assure you, if I were to call today and to inquire, it would fall on deaf ears. But they're promising us that they're really going to do something. And that something is, we don't know. But what they're doing is nothing in allowing, this is an actual conspiracy. When the federal law states you are required and you must, it is mandated that you do an impact statement, that you do get the biological opinions and the biological evaluations under the Section 10, Permit of the Endangered Species section. Doesn't sound important, but this is all the flamboyancy and the everyone saying I helped get the monument in. But the mechanics of it in protecting the animals and the environment and that is found inside of those boundaries, they're doing nothing. They're lending themselves to trickery again. So I don't know why the state would allow this. I don't know why our state senator would allow this. She said that she's of opposite to the environment. So the state fisheries are not in compliance with federal law. So that means the fishermen are vulnerable in that as we try to work and get them access and make what have you, make it better for them and improve the fishing and the recreational aspect and what have you. You have the state jeopardizing all of that because eventually if someone like myself, and I'm not saying this is what we're going to take in action immediately, but it is at our disposal, to actually file a letter of notice of intent to sue against the state to say that you have failed by law. It's mandated that you must do this. You must submit that application, and you must try and get an impact determination, and you must get the negligible impact determination from in this process, which will never, ever happen when you have the most rarest of endangered species or marine mammal in the United States. I can tell you, the likelihood of getting an exception or an impact incidental take is zero. So what's going to happen? Because they're lazy and playing games politically, they're jeopardizing the fishermen. Because now, if someone files a lawsuit, all of that comes into play. All of it. Then you have the fishermen who sit there, try to do the right thing, but their agency tricked them. Okay, we have circle hooks and say no barb. The fishermen are willing to do that. Fishermen go out and they don't want to harass the monk seal. Some of the fishermen will go out and see the monk seal and just wait until it leaves. Or go to another area when they know the seal is hauled out or working that area. But if the fishermen can think like that, then why can't our government keep it simple and do the right thing? So if we engaged in a lawsuit, that lawsuit, I believe it would be a pretty good lawsuit because the federal law states it would be the equivalent of the turtles out at sea with the long lines where Judge Ezra ruled a while back. So this is very, very serious and it jeopardizes. But, you know, they couldn't. I was wondering why couldn't we get this application in, and it would protect the fishermen, it would protect the monk seal, it would afford everybody the right thing and the benefits of doing the right thing. And I just couldn't find out. And so some months back, I learned that this was the behind-the-scenes activity occurring. And within the state, there are some people that are actually working with the fishermen, trying to ward off and reduce the impact. But the way to do it legally would be to file this application and tell Kitty Simons at the Western Pacific Fisheries Council to go pound sand, because it is not her jurisdiction. It is a requirement of the state. She's manipulating the state and telling the state, hold off and we're going to delist the turtle so that native people can, and when she has little or nothing of concern with the native people, if she wants to help the native people, she should stop spending the millions of dollars that is allocated for, in the past, for native fishing rights, and not pay the lawyers to review what is the proper way to implement a native fishing rights. So it's all cockeyed on her part. But how do you get a federal agency, an advisory agency, Western Pacific Fisheries Council, the state DLNR, to sit down and agree to violate federal law and to continue? That is falls within the definition of a conspiracy. If you were to go look up a conspiracy, you'll find that the meeting of two minds to commit an overt act. And what is the overt act? Hey, pick up the phone, write a letter. Can you pull that application on the sea turtles and on the monk seal and just hold it while law requires you to submit it? So this is where we are with this entire practice of politics in our system and our government. And what is suffering? The animals that, and the millions of dollars. Imagine hundreds of millions of dollars to hire people to study these animals, to manage within NOAA. And it all comes back to, when all is said and done, all the millions are spent, all the tax dollars, all the projects that could be funded for other things, this money is thrown away. And all of that money is squandered, and we have it coming back that just hold the application, a simple phone call and a simple letter to get people to agree to conspire to defraud the people and not to protect the species that is pretty much threatened with extinction. And this speaks to the situation we have here with the management, and within 15 years, and this is not me, the federal government is saying that they believe that for all intents and purposes, the monk seal, the declining population will be so low that within the Northwest Hawaiian Islands, there will be a very minuscule amount or a number will be reduced or could come to extinction out there. So they're here working within the main Hawaiian Islands, and I'm going to talk about that. And we're going to have a caller to come in, to call in, and Ms. Trish Watson, and we're going to talk about the sanctuary and the whale sanctuary and some of the other shenanigans that are consistent with this that speaks to the same type of management where money is being given and the public is being excluded. And hopefully, when she calls in, we'll take up that subject. But again, it's something I wished I could describe to you a little better and clearer. And I think you'd be outraged if you only knew that when you think about the millions and millions of dollars that we're wasting. That we're, when I say wasting, we're going out there and we're doing studies that don't work. And when you read some of their papers, they have qualifiers like the word, if the population does this, it is likely to do this. Well, this is science. So they play with these qualifiers, and they say that we're doing sampling and we're doing monitoring and the volunteers, and the numbers they're giving, they're doing it by proxy. So they really don't know what is happening with the population of monk seals. And you take, for example, they're saying, well, in the main Hawaiian Islands, the population is increasing or doing better, 25% better. But the problem is, where's the accuracy in the surveys? Not every monk seal is tagged, so we don't really know if we're recounting the monk seals. And in 2000, there was no systematic, prior to that, no systematic accounting. And now we're incorporating volunteers, and there's no science in that. It is people reporting that they saw a monk seal at a certain time on a certain date. But here's a trick in that. They are expecting the decline of the population of monk seals in the northwest Hawaiian islands in the sanctuary to go down and dwindle so low that it just will count them off, or write them off out there. So they're going to make the battle lines here within the main Hawaiian islands. But the problem is they'll be able to do that because they're saying this is a subpopulation. But what is the actual number? So if you hear and you see the pretty phasers, David Schofield, who runs the monk seal program, it's all fluff every time you see him. And I wish one day the media would just ask him, well, tell us about the monk seal. Tell us the number. Tell us about your agency and your sister agency, the Western Pacific Fisheries Council, holding back, having the state to withdraw their application to address the impacts on the monk seal. I don't want to see the stories, well, the blind monk seal went to the aquarium and now he's doing fine and he's shaking hands with people. And well, that's not what this is about. This is about letting us know the failure of this agency, the National Marine Fisheries Service under NOAA, the DLNR, who has responsibility. Now, out in the Pacific, there is an effort going, for example, Shark Fisheries for Ecology. They're hiring people to shoot the Galapagos shark in the northwest Hawaiian islands, French Rigged Shoals, in those areas. And because what's happening, the population out there, they don't tell you, again, the Western Pacific Fisheries Council allowed and implemented and supported and encouraged and got the continued fishing of lobsters, and which decimated the population of lobsters and octopi, which is crucial in the diet of monk seal, young monk seals. So monk seals are living to be 1 year old out there and not successful after that. And the sharks are killing them because they can't. They don't have the strength to evade the predator. So, but they're spending money to go out and shoot the sharks, but then basically have ridden the northwest Hawaiian islands off because they basically mismanaged the species. Anyway, I have Trish on the phone, and Trish Watson, and as I told you earlier, we were going to talk about the sanctuary that was it has some problems, and we've talked about it on air here. Good morning, Trish. How are you?
Good morning, Carol. How are you?
I'm fine, and sitting here a little frustrated at what's going on, but hopefully you can help us out with some of this.
Well, I hope I can. I don't know how much help even I can be at this point.
What I'm speaking on specifically is that the Maui, the office there in Maui, tell us, what's the problem? What's going on? We've spoke about it before on the show here, but what currently is some of the bigger problems that you guys in? What's happening?
Well, you know, let's start a little bit about my role. I'm simply a SAC member, so I sit on the Sanctuary Advisory Council. 2 years ago, I was selected to be the alternate Hawaiian member, which kind of amuses me that I'm the alternate Hawaiian, but the person who actually sits in the seat has not come for a while, so I've sort of by de facto assumed that constituency role. And it's been very interesting because as a SAC member, when I first came in, it really seemed that everything was wonderful and perfect and there really weren't problems. It was through sort of my community connections. I was on the board of Kahea and different organizations that I understood that there were problems. There were problems with the management, that people were frustrated with the lack of regulation. So it was very interesting because I found myself almost straddling two worlds. One as a SAC member, where we were constantly told everything was basically rosy, and one as a community member, where that wasn't the sentiment. So, you know, it's very interesting because as a SAC member, what I'm trying to do is just do a good job representing my constituency and bring to the attention of the SAC sort of these ongoing concerns and conflicts that the community is having with the sanctuary. So, you know, I think that's a bit of the background, and I'm not really sure what the resolution will be out of all of this, because I know I have personally tried to talk to some of the staff, and it's been a very interesting experience. I think my experience has been like the experiences of many community people, where they feel like sometimes their concerns fall on deaf ears. And I'm very, you know, I mean, I'm actually open to suggestions from the community as to how they think we can best move forward. You know, like I said, my role is very limited. I'm just a SAC member, but I think I'm a SAC member that is always willing to bring to the SAC these community concerns. So I think the issue is just really a lack of communication that gets to the SAC sometimes, and sort of the lack of response to community concerns. I think that's my primary issue at the moment.
Mm-hmm. Well, I must apologize. It is Dr. Trish Watson, folks. I'm sure she worked very hard, and JD as well. So my apologies.
Oh, no, not a problem at all.
I get into this sometimes when we start talking about monk seals and people in government that fails them and fail us in doing so. So I get a little...
and it's not a problem at all.
But anyway...
I next to never use it, and one looking at me, the running joke is nobody would ever be able to tell, which I like.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, you can look at me and tell I'm a frustrated old man now, that they're just tired of this whole merry-go-round. But some of the things regarding this sanctuary, the Maui meeting was ill-advised in a methodology. I got an email that talks about that. What are some of those points in there? The sanctuary seems to have already decided to expand jurisdiction without addressing the population concerns.
Well, you know,
the regulation concerns.
You know, and again, this is sort of where standing between these two worlds. Well, and I first need to say, I really loved being on the SAC. I mean, I really think they have a phenomenal group of community people who care a lot about the sanctuary, and yet at the same time are not always given a really clear picture of what's going on in the community. I think that's been really interesting. So as a SAC member, like I said, you know, we've sat through these meetings, we've sat through these things, and I'll say this, the SAC has only met about once a year. I mean, it's not, you know, we've been told that there's not funding available for us to meet. I believe that, my understanding is that Dan Boss has just approved a more frequent meeting schedule, which is really great. But, you know, as a SAC member, when we were starting to talk about the management, there was a lot of talk about expanding jurisdiction to take on other animals, to take on perhaps more area, and that, you know, that one's not set in stone. But it was interesting because the talk of increasing regulations was not something I got a message about. You know, the talk was about expanding jurisdiction. And yet when you talk to the community's overwhelming concern is, do the job you're supposed to be doing first. Increase regulations, implement regulations, sort of do a better job of taking care of what is already your responsibility with the sanctuary before you talk about expanding jurisdiction or going on to other things. And I have to agree with that. I mean, it was really a sort of eye-opening experience for me to sort of get these floods of phone calls and emails from people who knew me and happened to know I was on the SAC, just expressing these long-time concerns, and then to see a lot of the media coming out of the last month and a half or so, or the last 2 months since the Maui meeting, you sort of hear the same message over and over again. And so part of the reason I guess we're talking today is because there's an upcoming SAC meeting on May 25th and 26th, and these are public meetings.
Mm-hmm.
And my hope is to take the community message to the SAC. Again, I'll say I have always found the SAC members to be wholly responsive and supportive of that conversation. You talk about monk seals. At the last meeting, actually, I sort of raised the flag about monk seals and what was happening on Molokai and what had happened with KP2 and all these other things. And, you know, I've just received, you know, a phenomenal amount of support from, sorry, I have a child in the house, you know, a lot of support from other SAC members in trying to resolve these issues. And, you know, it's been interesting because I've actually found Fisheries Service to be the far more responsive agency in this mix right now. So it's a very interesting situation because I do think the SAC is absolutely open to hearing from the public and responding appropriately. I just think that message needs to get to them, and it very rarely does.
And how do they do this, and what address do they send, or who do they call?
You know,
have any?
At this point, I think probably the best course of action. I mean, what I'm hearing from people is that people have tried to get messages to the SAC and it doesn't come through. I would say to just show up. I mean, I believe the meeting is going to be at the Hawaii Kai facility, so the sanctuary office in Hawaii Kai, if I'm correct. And, you know, they're public meetings. There are places on our agenda for the public to come and comment. And we almost, I can't think of a time when we've had members from the public come. So I think just coming and engaging is really, I think the SAC would respond to that. I mean, I just really believe in these people and have really enjoyed getting to know them. So I'm hoping people can come. Or they can write to me. You know, that's another option as well. People can always write to me, and I will be more than happy to give that to them.
And what is that address they would write to you?
They can write to me at Watson, W-A-T-S-O-N, at honuaconsulting.com.
And that's H-O-M, Watson, W-A-T-S-O-N, at H-O-N-U-A-C-O-N-S-U-L-T-I-N-G.com,
yeah.
Right? And is there anybody in the federal system? Now, again, this is going to be the 25th and 26th of May, correct?
Yes.
Okay, and so they can either call the National Marine Fisheries Service or NOAA. Is there a particular office they can call for?
No, well, we're not really, the SAC is under sanctuaries, right?
Okay.
It's not under fisheries. So it's under a different branch of
okay.
NOAA.
Okay.
So they could call the Humpback Whale Sanctuary office. We have an office in Honolulu. I'm sorry, I don't have that number off the top of my head. But they can get more information. And you know, I'll certainly be happy to pass along the specific information about the meeting just to confirm the time and the place with you. But I do know it's the 25th and 26th. Yes. And I think the day where we're going to be discussing sort of the future issues with the sanctuary is going to be the 26th.
Okay, well, if you would, send me
Absolutely.
An email, and I'll post it on carolcox.com.
That
would
be great.
And they can go there, and next Sunday, hopefully we can mention it then. But
yes, that would be great. And, you know, the one thing I really want to convey to people is to not get overly discouraged. I mean, as sort of a long-time activist myself, it is very easy to be very, very frustrated and very, very discouraged. But, you know, I think we have really, really good, smart people in the community that are, you know, fully paying attention to this issue now. And I'm very hopeful that if everybody can continue to rally together and stay really focused on these ocean environments, which is really why we're all here, that we will be able to make the changes that need to be made.
Well, it seems that the native people did a pretty good job without the millions of dollars for eons to manage it, and it was here when modern man came and found it here. Isn't that funny? And now we're struggling.
Yeah. Trust me, that's never lost on us Native Hawaiians. So.
I mean, you have an army of agencies and a bag full of money, and it just seems like one problem after the other. And the biggest problem is that they're not listening and affording the public to participate. That's mostly what I hear in all of these situations.
And I actually completely agree with that. And I think, you know, I really talked with different people involved with this across the state, you know, especially the Native Hawaiian community. And I think we're at a point where what we're saying is just, you know, let us do what we do. I mean, I kind of get out of our way. You know, we don't want, I mean, you're exactly right. We don't want your help. We don't want your money. We don't, get out of our way. You know, it's sort of it. And understand that, you know, particularly when it comes to ocean and land issues, These are all, you know, and the mammals, you know, the marine mammals as well, these are all family to us. You know, the land is family to us. The ocean is family to us. The animals are family to us. And we're perfectly capable of taking care of our family. So I think that, you know, I think we're at a point where we're just going to make a stand for that. And, you know, we welcome anybody, you know, all the Hawaiiana who love the ocean and the earth as much as we do and are trying to be involved and have that passion to, you know, to just join that and to have faith that, you know, that this will get better. And I am hopeful. I mean, I really, truly am hopeful that this will get better because, like I said, I think there are wonderful people involved. It's just a matter of giving them the space to help. And that's all that's going on is everybody wants to help, which is a good thing.
Well, when the native people see the animals and the environment as part of those in, as part of the family and the agency see these things as obstacles, you're never going to get the truth. You're never going to get good management.
Well, I agree with you. I think, like I said, you know, I think fisheries has really made great strides. I think the Northwestern Hawaiian Islands actually is an interesting place. I mean, it's managed by Hawaiian. I actually sit on that cultural advisory working group. So I think it's done some great things, you know, with Hawaiians. I think the humpback whale sanctuary is a very different story, though. But it's not for lack of SAC members who want to do the right thing. So I think, again, it's opening up that communication. It's creating transparency where there has, seems to me, has been next to none. You know, I mean, again, if it were not for people in the community approaching me on their own, mm-hmm. I wouldn't know anything about this history. I wouldn't know that there were all these issues statewide. It's not coming to us, to the SAC. It's coming to me sort of as an individual community member. So my hope is that, you know, that we can fix that, you know. I mean, I may end up getting tossed off the SAC at the end of this, but, you know, I absolutely think that, mm-hmm. you know, we have to try. That's all we can do, and do our absolute best effort to fix this problem, and, you know, we'll take it from there. But I'm hopeful that this will work.
Okay. Well, if we can be any help, let me know and send me that address, and I'll look also, and we'll try and get it out there. So.
Well, and like I said, it's, you know, I believe there's 9-3 or 9-4, the 25th and 26th. My understanding is the 25th is going to be sort of our regular business, which is, you know, going through different reports from the different committees and the different agencies that are involved. But the 26th is really going to be the day where we address sort of the meetings that have happened statewide and what happens from here. I think people need to appreciate that technically the NEPA process has not even begun yet. These all been pre-scoping meetings. So, again, I think that's why I'm so hopeful. There's still lots of time to get this back on track, you know, and I think we're really in a critical year. This management plan is going to be written this year. Let's make sure we have a strong community voice involved in that. So that's really my hope. That's my goal. And, you know, I'm hopeful that with everybody pulling together, we can have a management plan that addresses all the issues that are critical to the community.
Okay. Well, again, thank you.
No, and, thank you so much for having me on the show this morning.
Do call back, and if you have any more points or...
I'll definitely email you so you can get it up on the website, and then maybe we'll talk again next weekend.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks so much, Carol. Thank you for everything you do.
All righty. Dr. Trish Watson, thank you.
Bye. Bye-bye.
Anyway, we have to know. There's a couple things going on here. Why should you be concerned if you love animals? And I don't want anyone to go away thinking, well, you know, it's all about the animals. No, it's about the animals and then some more. It's about the politics in it. It's about the waste of money. If you know, we talk about giving the inner city people money for welfare and what have you. That's minuscule in comparison to what you get, the waste, in the Western Pacific Fisheries Council, for example. The waste in the DLNR, where we throw millions at this effort, and it all comes down to a whisper of a phone call. Or a setting up a SAC and funding the meetings and hiring employees that would schedule the meetings, and then they exclude the public because they don't really want to hear what the public has to say because they are predisposed. They know exactly what they're going to do. And the troubling part of this is the simple. The very people you see today sitting and incorporating native rights and all of that, they're just touching on the periphery, on the skirt tail of it. The reality is that Western Pacific Fisheries Council has been around for a long time. They're the ones who authorized and sought and approved and used their political arm twisting to deplete the lobster population while knowing, this is no new subject, they knew and they were told by the Marine Mammal Commission that, in fact, the decline in the population of lobsters and the octopi would be problematic to the maturation of the monk seal. They also know that the interaction of turtles with the bottom fishing and fishing would be a problem. Now, a lot of you know about the tumors on the turtles, the fibropapilloma. But they're still pushing ahead. They can't tell you why, and they can't say that they have a cure in the making or in the works. But they're eager to delist the animal when we really don't know, the animal being the turtle, while we don't know why and where this papilloma, this fibropapilloma comes from and how to stop it. Now, arguably, they say that it does not kill the turtle, but if you got tumors on your throat and your neck and your flippers, well, you can't swim, so you can't avoid predators, and you can't swallow what you eat because you got the tumors on your throat and on your eyes, so you can't see the predator coming. But you have the Western Pacific Fisheries Service Council in concert with National Marine Fisheries Service and all of its advisors and scientists and the UH people and all the other knuckleheads that's running around getting grants to do grants. Some of these grants they give out for studying, absolutely. You'd be shocked. They don't even work. They don't come up with anything. They don't follow through. And when you look at the millions that are thrown at this, and now they're telling us, so the population in Northwest Hawaii and in the main Hawaiian island is looking pretty good. So therefore, we can go and get an incidental take permit on the monk seal. That's what you have coming down the pipe. But addressing the turtles, you see, Westpac is really sneaky. They're going to be able to say, well, if we can delist that, then we don't have to take ever again. We get around Judge Ezra because, hey, it's delisted. We get around any environmental group that would sue us. But they did it in an area that is really none of their business. This is in state waters. They got the state to conspire with them. Laura Thielen conspired with them. She still sits and holds that application. And again, how does this work now? Just got some recent information, and just to give you an idea, Linda Lingle is trying now to get, again, Peter Young back. She's nominated him for the nomination to the Regional Fisheries Management Council. This guy was run out of office out of DLNR. We thought he was gone, and yet Lingle, I watched her last night on TV talking about the other side, and I'm disappointed in her because I shouldn't be, but, you know, when she first came in, she was going to tear down the walls of partisan politics and on and on and on, and she was going to be righteous. And then she is behaving in the worst fashion that you can imagine. I hope to forever remind her of this, whatever she runs for. Congress, Senate, whatever she decides she wants to. I'm looking at this and saying, deceitful. She is allowing Peter Young, Laura Thielen, to sit there and play footsies with Kitty Simons and others on the Western Pacific Fisheries Council and NOAA. And imagine now, you got the NOAA people who are now coming out of the Coast Guard and what have you. Where's the ethics of these people? You've seen that I've written about the ethics of the Coast Guard and its hiring and what have you. Yet, they gravitate to the NOAA, not only DLNR. So you got an official that used to work with Coast Guard, Mike Tosato, who was there. So he's trying to elevate himself up to Bill Robinson. And they're taking millions and throwing at these people. It is shameful. Absolutely shameful. And the bottom line is, we're talking about endangered species, the monk seal and the sea turtles. And there's five species found here in Hawaii of sea turtles. So what do you do? That is the problem that we have in this world of buddy-buddy system. To heck with the environment, to heck with the resources. And I would like to hear within the next week, Colleen Hanabusa, Ed Case, to tell me specifically what you would do to address these things. And you notice I didn't mention Mr. DeJoux. Well, if Lingle has already spoken. It's her administration, so he's going to go along to get along. And that is the trouble with this. So I am pretty much resigned or resolved to thinking that when you have a conspiracy against the people and then you conspire to bring the people in, you bring the people in and you say we're going to do this for Native Hawaiians, that's wrong. So, it's trickery. You use them to say you're going to give them the right to fish or to take turtles. That's why you're exempting and that's why you want to delist it. When you know you have a bigger lie to be told, when you're trying to get it done so that you can exempt a fisheries from the take. But anyway, I'm going to close out here with, again, Miss Lena Horn. And thank you for joining me, carolcox.com. See you next week.
Is it an earthquake or is it a shock? Is it the good turtle soup or merely the mouth? Is it a cocktail, this feeling of joy? Or is what I feel the real McCoy? Is it for always or just for a lark? Is it Granada I see only at Ferry Park? Is it a fancy not worth dreaming of? Or is it at long last love?
And tune in again next time for the Carol Cox Show on K108.
This is KWAI, Honolulu 1080 on the AM dial.